We are scheduled for a work session on the MDU natural gas rate case number PU-17-295, and we have a slight delay. I expect we'll be starting about 1:15. Okay, this good afternoon, everyone. I am Randy Christman, Chairman of the Commission, joined by Commissioners Brian Krashus and Julie Fedorchek. This is a work session, though, not a meeting, on case number PU-17-295, Montana Dakota Utilities Company natural gas rate increase application. And I don't have any opening comments. Commissioner Fedorchek, do you?
I do not.
I'll turn it over to you and Commissioner Krashus as the portfolio holder to take it away.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Well, I want to start with just some questions that I have related to the SIP.
Brian, if I could just interrupt, just in case someone would be monitoring the broadcast that monitored the hearing but hasn't been aware of what's transpired since then.
Sure.
So I guess we had the hearing, and what was it, like the last day or two of May and 1st of June, something like that. And subsequently, advocacy staff and the company reached a settlement agreement that is now under discussion, and I think one intervener signed off on the settlement and one intervener has not. If I'm looking at staff to see if I have that correct. But so there is a settlement agreement being discussed. So if someone's just not been in on that, that's why the conversation would be different than what they heard at the hearing. Sorry
right.
to interrupt.
No, good point. And then this all began on July 21st of 2017, and then the original request was on a per customer basis. Was $2.98, and then $2.44 was the interim rate. Then the Tax Cut and Jobs Act came into play, which delayed this particular case, as that those numbers were worked through. That changed the number to $1.82 per month, and the settlement that we're talking about today would be $1.27 per customer. So that. And as Commissioner Christman mentioned, there have been different meetings, work sessions, and of course, the hearing along the way. So the questions that I have are related to the settlement and just where that wound up. So just so I have this clear then on the... On the 2018, and I'm talking about the line replacement, replacing some of the old pipe in the ground that's currently in the ground that's underway. It's being replaced, and that would be included in the $2.5 million. Is that correct? The settlement amount, which is $2.5
million. There were projects in the test year expense that would be part of the settlement that are in it. So stuff that was slated for 2018 is, and I don't know exactly what is, because the settlement didn't exactly address it. But that was my understanding, that the projects that were in the 2018 test year were allowed for in the settlement.
Okay. So that's a part of the $2.5 million.
Yep.
And then going forward, and that would be on page, I have it highlighted here. Well, the question, I guess I don't have to find... the exact spot, but the question would be, how is, for the projects, the replacement projects that would be identified in the future subject to commission approval, again talking about replacement of old infrastructure, how does that account for in the 2.5, or is that Is that on the rate 94?
I believe that.
Separate standalone, is that correct?
Yeah, I believe that they would file for that under the 94 tracker if they get it approved.
Okay. So then that would not be a part of the $1.27. That would be in addition to?
Right.
Okay.
Can you say that again, Brian, which projects you're talking about in addition to the 2019 projects?
Just future projects. They had, and I would have to track it down, had outlined what they were doing in 2018, but then there were other examples of what they want to do going forward in addition to those projects.
SSIP projects.
Yeah. Right.
SSIP. I think I might have said SIPP, but SSIP.
But they did name some in the...
Yeah. Yeah, they gave a pretty good outline of what they'd like to do. And then at that point in time, we would review those. And that would be subject to commission approval as I read the order, the settlement.
The question
agreement
of the tracker is open. What you're describing is what would happen if the tracker was in place. If the tracker isn't in place, they would be reviewed in a normal rate case scenario, or if they came in for a single issue rate case.
Right, right. Okay, yep, perfect.
But my understanding is that the settlement doesn't address that one way or the other, correct?
Correct, that's my understanding or reading of it.
It creates rate 94.
The settlement doesn't. It leaves it open. The parties couldn't reach an agreement on that. The rate 94 is in their filing for the rate case, a new tariff sheet, and the parties couldn't reach an agreement on to approve it or not approve it or anything. So that's left for us to decide, for the commission to decide.
Okay. I don't think that's a bad thing personally, because we have the opportunity to say no if we don't think it's warranted. But I think 2018, and I didn't see this in the settlement, but just getting a better handle on the facilities that are being replaced this year, this summer, will there be any testing of those components? So we have a better handle going forward on. Right now, basically, it's when I read this, you know, the types of pipe are identified. But I still think the question out there for me is how much life is remaining on those components, and not just the pipe, but the components, the fittings, et cetera.
There was some testimony regarding depreciation and to what extent the average remaining lives were and things like that of these facilities. And I guess some came from the company and some came from staff and the interveners. And so the company one is saying, well, we've got more than 50% of the remaining lives have been used up on a lot of them, and the company would turn it, or the staff would turn around and say there's 50% left. So it's, the argument can be made either way, and it was.
Well, is there a way on the 2018 SSIP projects, and I know there's a way, at least I believe there's a way, to get a better handle as some of that is being taken out of the ground, that would reinforce the need to continue doing more of it rather than just going back on the argument, if you will, that if we wait, it's going to have a significant impact on ratepayers when all of this infrastructure has to be replaced if the time frame is squeezed. Just as an example, nothing happened for the next 20 years outside of the 2018 projects. And then for 20 years, nothing else happened.
Well,
but then what's the impact? So what's the balance?
I think that you're right. And as you start digging stuff up and exploring, you'll find out more of what's going on under there and what you have. But I also think that's going to happen regardless whether you give them the tracker or not. They're still, I think, need to get in there, and I think they will, and explore this matter and fix the pipe that needs to be fixed.
Well, the testing part of the plan is part of the 2018 allowable amounts, correct?
I think so. Yeah. Or at least part of the testing.
Yeah.
And that they'd finish it during this period because it sounds like a
but
big job.
I think that's a key component. And, of course, I was just rereading the cross-examination of the opponent witnesses, and even he admitted that, if it were just testing and study and not replacement, there would be no objection because the testing and study and figuring out is needed.
Wasn't he saying, though, that once you... The testing and the study was only 15% of the total revenues requested.
That's true. Because
2018.
Yes, because
the other 85 was going to the replacement of the steel.
Right. Exactly.
I think he was
talking about the SIP plan. But the point is, testing and study is part of what they intend to do with the allowed project, but not. I mean, that's a separate question from recovery of going forward.
I don't mean to quote here. I'm going from my notes. But I was intrigued by something that Pavlovic said, and just based on my notes, he mentioned an accelerated replacement program similar to SSIP would be more acceptable, where the company would present plans in the spring and then with a true-up in the fall. That would require a filing fee so that we can properly evaluate it. I think that would then go without saying that the testing from 2018 had better have been done, or it's going to be a pretty hard sell to get the 2019 and 20 and subsequent year projects approved. But I guess I will say that I was not a fan of the SSIP, of just building it in and having them move forward all based on this rate case. My preference is to do something like that where we deal with these projects in advance, either through a rate case or a one-issue rate case, or I don't know if this accelerated replacement program would be identified as something other than a one-issue rate case, or if that's what you mean when you say one-issue rate case or what.
Well, if it's a one-issue rate case, at least you can assess a fee, or a fee is required.
So maybe that would
And
be
if it's
right
just a review today, you can't, and I don't think there's any authority for the commission to set a fee without a statute.
So are you calling a one-issue rate case and the tracker the same thing?
No.
Because of the fee?
Part of it. That's part of it. A tracker is a rider.
Right.
Like the transmission, like the renewable, like the environmental recovery. And a one-issue rate case is, hi, we have this big thing going on that's costing us money. We need our rates changed. And there's nothing magic about calling it a one-issue. If there were other issues that people like Victor noticed or interveners mm-hmm. noticed that had reduced costs that somehow offset part of that, they certainly could be considered in that case. Mm-hmm.
So I am still studying this. I met with staff for a good amount of time yesterday, had a good discussion and asked them to dig up a little bit more information. But for me, I have a hard time distinguishing from both sides some key things that they complain about. The one thing that, like Pavlovic says, here's what I think is appropriate, these, this, this, that, and this in an accelerated plan. And I look at what the company is proposing, and it seems to be what he's asking for, except for the fee and maybe a caps on the total spending, which I did note that they proposed both in their final proposed order on the settlement, or findings, facts, conclusions, law, and order. The company proposed adding those components in, so I think what the company proposed in their final filing is very close to what Pavlovic and staff had argued for. But then the staff continually say, and so do our advisory to me, when I met with them yesterday, there's not enough detail about why we need to do this. And I'm just going to be upfront with the piece of detail that I finally understand and agree is could be better addressed by the company, and I'll be visiting more about this with Pat because he's going to be searching the record for whether he thinks it's in there or not. But so they've done their work on the DIMP. They have all those things in place. They run the DIMP model. The DIMP model identifies the priorities in terms of the highest risk and down, you know, ranking below that. And we're seeing that in the bare steel and in the early vintage plastic pipe Al-Delay stuff. So they've identified those. But what staff, our advisory staff, is struggling with is just because it's the highest priority of all the priorities, does that mean it needs to be replaced? And so that's kind of where I'm zeroing in my remaining kind of thoughts on this and questions. And then, you know, the whole issue of, you know, no matter what we do, I think we have to make it clear to the company that we believe in and support, at least I do, a plan for, you know, consistently and more proactively replacing the pipe, because it is a big system and it's going to need to be regenerated. We can't wait too long to start doing that. It's going to be too big of a rate impact. So how we get there from here to when that starts happening and what we need to have in place in terms of information and mechanisms for recovery and the assurance that it's being done at the right time, not too soon, not too late. I think that's where I don't know that we're there yet, but that's what I'm kind of struggling with.
So on the DIMP model, does that imply testing will occur? Is that sufficient, just calling it the DIMP model?
I don't remember. Jerry, do you remember?
I think it just identified a, kind of like risk factors.
Yeah.
We didn't have the models, so we haven't seen them. We've just heard of them. And so I think it's like an identifier that these probably need to be looked at.
So can someone point out on the settlement agreement where it shows that testing will occur? Or how we get to that point?
I don't think there's anything in the settlement agreement
to that effect. I think that's implied from what they said they were going to do with the rate, with the test year investment, and the fact that the investment isn't disallowed. Now, the number's different because the grand total number is different. So I think it's, you have to imply if A, then B, then C.
They have to do the DIMP model. It's required by PHMSA.
Yeah, the DIMP
that's
model.
That's baked
the test. No, that I know. But does that imply that the material will be tested is the question I have.
I don't think so. He goes through pretty in Pat Darris's first set of testimony, their pre-filed stuff. He goes pretty thoroughly through how they handle their whole integrity management program and the DIMP modeling and the GIS, how they use their GIS system and all of that, I think is pretty thoroughly outlined. And it says the model assesses 8 different threat categories: corrosion, natural forces, equipment failure, excavation, incorrect operation, joint failure, outside force, and other equally weighted.
Right.
Other. So it's...
it's implied.
It's part of their regular management.
Well, and if they're... obviously, they're listening, so they're getting a real clear sense of direction, at least from my perspective, and not to assume, but that this would have to be supported with at least some science going forward.
Well, I'm thinking you have to dig this stuff up if you want to see what's down there.
Right. But that, I remember asking the question during the hearing if those fittings and components or any sections of pipe had been sent off for analysis, and I thought the answer was no, they hadn't been grouped and tested. So 2018, if that's true, really becomes a test year in terms of, okay, these facilities were replaced. Following their replacement, certain components were critical components, sections of pipe, whatever, were sent for testing, and here's what we found. So, I mean, if the test results came back and indicated that, well, this is good for another 50 years, that's that's quite different than something that's got 12 to 15 years. And I agree completely with you, Julie. We can't wait too long, because then it's the rate impact is significant. But I just want a better sense of direction, that we're not pulling, or they're not pulling facilities out of the ground that still have 50 years left on them.
And I think in the beginning they're just not going to know.
Right.
Without the testing and study, there was just repeated testimony about that. I can go find some of it after the meeting, but
we need to have something
after 2018,
simple.
There should be more.
Yeah, there should
right.
be, but
and there should be more.
And so even if we require testing, you know, there's a good one and a bad one here, but there's two reasons to replace a bunch of pipe. One is because it's problematic and causing a danger. The other would be because there's a return to be made on it, and even though it's really, really excellent, there's something new out there that is even more excellent. That's not a very good reason to me. And so just to me, that SSIP opens the door for the second one to be used as a rationale as also. And I don't think that would be just and reasonable. And so I think I don't know what the exact solution is. I'm not a fan of the SSIP, but if it's, as I had in my notes, an accelerated replacement program, or if that's a single issue rate case each year, or however we would do that, that at least for the first year or two after we get some testing results from 2018, this commission would have the ability before the construction season to evaluate what the projects are going to be and make a decision on whether they should go forward, and then it can be trued up at the end of the construction season, I think is the more appropriate way of moving forward on this, rather than the SSIP that for years to come just kind of presumes that all this stuff is bad and needs to be replaced.
Well, there was an option raised, you know, in the hallway to me about alternatives, and we talked about it slightly yesterday, but one is advanced determination of prudence cases, which the commission has authority to do, even though there's a statute that has specific authority for generation. And so the company could have its science together and its testing results each year and have a small advanced determination of prudence for this year's plan, which would then, if approved, give them that guaranteed recovery. And when it's the right time, get actual recovery.
Right.
Then or later. But there's a fee associated with an ADP, and that's helpful too.
Mm-hmm. So. I think that offers some real potential as a possible approach. I didn't like it the first time because sometimes the ADPs take forever.
Well,
but if it was a more focused
and
regular process and perhaps a little more streamlined, it might work. Yeah. The part that really frustrates me on all of this is that, and this is just another example of it, it's happened a couple times in this rate case, where I just feel like the company could help us all out by being more forthcoming with information. Here on page 27 of Pat's model, or Pat's testimony, Pat Darris, his pre-filed, he outlines, he says, the model, the DIMP model, sets a 50 by 50 foot grid to analyze all components. Each grid is then analyzed by 8 individual submodels with up to 150 calculations in each model. This, in turn, produces a very comprehensive look at the entire system with each component compared equally to the others across the entire 4 state operating areas. In North Dakota, 23.4 million feet of pipe was analyzed with approximately 5.16 million calculations to support that model. So how is it that with all of that, if that's what's done, how is it that there's still so many questions remaining on leaks? What is your leak detection? All these questions that were asked during the hearing from advocacy staff, and before the hearing, I have to assume, wanting more detail. If they've done all this, that detail, it may exist today, and we might have all the justification we need for this, but we have to pull it out piece by piece by piece, just like on that airplane thing, from the company. And it's just, it's not effective. They just have to do a better job of trying to understand what it is we're really asking and getting us the information, even if it isn't stated just perfectly so to get that particular piece of information. Because it just takes too long to get to the bottom of stuff. It shouldn't have to be this hard.
I share your frustration. Well put, I don't have anything to add to that. But I'm not hearing, though, a desire to go through with the SSIP where in this case.
I'm waiting to hear back from Pat Fawn on some of the questions that I've asked him to try to get to the bottom of, you know, what I'm concerned that all this information does exist someplace in the record, maybe it's, you know, hidden between the lines, that would justify what I think the SSIP and accelerated replacement plan are the same thing. I think the SSIP is one type of an accelerated replacement plan.
To me, the distinction I'm making is, one, we're approving it for years to come in this rate case, regardless what the testing shows. In the other, we would look at it next year and decide each year going forward until something different was done. I think that's the difference.
Mm-hmm. No, because in the way that tariff is designed, the projects come to us every year, and we have to approve them.
But without any sort of a filing fee or
no, but they did propose
like
adding that
to do much with.
And Alana says we can't do that, so that's where the problem, I think, becomes with the tracker approach, is that we can't just add a filing fee in Alana's view. So we'd have to...
You can only do what the statutes
make more sense.
Allow you to do, and we have so many statutes with specific fees. Think weights and measures. So you could never imply that we had some kind of implied authority to set another fee. Just too many fees in statutes.
Their willingness doesn't allow us
no.
to do it.
So we've got the question that's in front of us still is whether or not to give them the tracker. You can, if you say no on the tracker, you can deal with the cost recovery some other way. They're coming in here every couple of years for the rate case. I mean,
you can invite them in.
In 2 years, if they feel like they need a rate case from doing these projects, then they'd come in again. Or you can dream up something else, but it would be some sort of a tracker. type account that would let them get recovery without coming in for a rate case. The idea of an ADP kind of solves your funding problem. You get an ADP and then put it in the tracker.
Unless we can't use that statute, I thought of that afterwards, since it's a generation statute. But we could look at that. We do have the rate case one, rate change, you know, would certainly work.
There's also a legislative session coming up, and this has been addressed by legislatures in other states where there's sort of enabling legislation that says this is an important issue, you need to tackle this, and we think you should do whatever it is, ADPs or a tracker or however, whatever direction they want to provide.
Aside from the fact that there isn't a filing fee, and I like having a separate way to follow this, because this isn't standard maintenance. This is, I just think it would be cleaner versus inviting a rate case potentially every year. Things change.
Well, yes, things change in other areas also, and that's the beauty of the rate case, that there could be something to offset it, you know. And it can be tracked and accounted for there's piece parts to a tracker. The tracking part of it is very useful. The getting the money early, so to speak, I'm using that term loosely, from ratepayers, as opposed to when it's used, you know, used and useful. It's a little bit different.
Your tracker could. They don't get anything in the tracker until it's in service, used and useful, barring some kind of thing with Quip or something like that going in there.
That could be tracker language, you're saying, Jerry.
Yeah.
Is that in there today, your understanding?
I'd have to, you know, I don't even have that tariff on.
I don't either.
There is a possibility of making the tracker a separate proceeding
on this
and not decide it with this rate case, and then have a further talk about what you're going to do with it and a further decision at a later time.
I don't want to all of a sudden run out of time and we've only ever discussed SSIP or alternatives and nothing else regarding this. I will say this, though, with regards to maybe a legislative change or an alternative to this, it appears to me that if this settlement were approved and then the lingering question of what to do about SSIP, if this commission chose to grant SSIP as originally proposed as part of the settlement, there really wouldn't be much momentum from anyone except us to seek an alternative or a legislative change, because the company would have these projects pre-approved based on the rate case then. And whatever we would do each spring with that, with the, I don't know if you call it an application or what, that they would bring us, but we'd have no ability to do much with it, in my opinion.
Well, that's why I had asked them at the hearing if they were willing to propose and carry legislation.
But if we approved it here, there would not be a big incentive for them to want to do that.
There would not be.
So, unless there's specific questions on that, should we talk about the other, the part of the settlement, I guess, outside of the SSIP?
Alana, have you talked about the hearing issue?
I didn't, and I did a little more work on it this morning, and had an email conversation with the ALJ. You know, we do have a case, and it's under slightly different law. The law had changed slightly, and that's what I found today, but where it seemed as though a settlement filed after an evidentiary hearing and a party disagreeing with it required a hearing. The phrase that we added to that statute, it used to say, if the commission is sure that all of the parties agree, they can decide things without a hearing. Now it says, if the commission is sure they all agree or no one's asked for a hearing, they can decide things without a hearing. So it's kind of a conclusion of myself and the ALJ that we need at least a notice. We first thought we would have we should have a hearing dates set. And this is only because, not because the settlement does anything strange or different, but because there's a party that doesn't agree, period. So we initially thought, have a date set, the ALJ can open and close a hearing. If nobody else comes, nobody else comes. But it's done. The alternative to that is to issue a notice of opportunity, but also ask the ALJ to get the parties together at a conference and get waivers of hearing from them, statements from them that they have no desire for a hearing.
Before I would respond to that, I want to ask a different but similar question. What, do we have a time deadline on this? We're way more than, 270 days, but there was an extension
granted.
Is that a endless extension, or what kind of deadlines do we
have? It's not really endless, but because you have interim rates, it doesn't. It matters because you don't want things to build too badly, but the company's been getting their interim rates, and so the pressure for them to start getting the new rates is off. So it's not as bad.
But it still exists, whether they're not happy about it or not. Is there a deadline that still exists?
Well, the deadline in the statute. Is the purpose of the deadline in the statute to decide a case within a certain number of months. The purpose of that is to protect the company, okay? So the company has waived that. I believe that's somewhere back in the docket when we extended it, okay? So Victor's telling me, is there a date? If I may ask Victor, is there a date in that extension?
September
1st, okay. And we got lots of time, yeah. They may be willing to extend it another month or something to get this wrapped up. But I'm sorry I didn't go back and look at it because I just assumed it was not a date. So.
Well, I think we have a I don't want to keep kicking this down the road. I think we have a decision to make, and I would like to make it quickly. I don't know what things we have to do about the intervener that didn't agree with the settlement, but
well, can you read that again, Alana?
I didn't bring it in with me, but it says I can go get it over here unless you've got the book.
Because you said there is a line that says, "or nobody requests," because obviously they know that line. They know what's going on.
They didn't object to the settlement.
Wouldn't they be served the settlement so they know about it?
Yes.
It
would have been but they also had a request from the ALJ to what was their position on, and it says interested party. It doesn't say intervener. So that's the other problem. There could be a non-intervener that's an interested party somewhere lurking out there that we don't know about. That's the purpose of doing a notice.
I see.
Does that have to go out?
Pardon me?
How long would the notice have to go?
The notice would only have to run 20 days from publication in the whatever is the last publication. I did try to reach Pat to ask him that for the MDU towns, but I didn't get an answer.
So it's pretty close to September 1st.
Yeah. I mean, we could have a special meeting and get a notice out tomorrow or whenever you want to do it, and that would start that time. Let me find it here. The case we got overturned on, we knew the party had disagreed and not asked for a hearing, and we got overturned. And so it's just a very cautious, I realize it sounds overly cautious, but I think everybody's better off if we have some sort of notice.
I think before I would want to spend 20 days issuing a notice just to fish for that one intervener. Maybe we don't agree to this. Maybe we're miles off on the settlement, and we're not going to do it anyway. So I, you know, if it seemed like there was general consensus on the settlement or general disagreement to it, I guess if it's consensus, then the question would be, what do we do about SSIP? If there's complete disagreement to it, then we can just decide that we're not doing that. We don't need a hearing to decide we're not approving it, correct?
Well, I don't know the answer to that without more thought, but I will read the sentence, which was a couple questions back. Whenever it appears to the satisfaction of the commission that all of the interested parties have agreed concerning the matter, or that no interested party has asked for a hearing, the commission may issue its order without a hearing.
Okay, so in the first part of that, we've always, it seems like, when the interveners have agreed, we've determined that those are the interested parties.
Not exactly. When the issues haven't changed at all, we don't issue a new notice. Because if someone's asking for $1 million, someone's arguing they only deserve $200,000, you settle on $500,000, anybody interested in that issue should have showed up at the first hearing. But if the issues changed, we would issue a new notice, like in the Big Stone case being one example I remember. Now here, the issues really have not changed, but the parties haven't agreed. So,
but the interested parties is the term that I'm...
Yes, and you can't assume that's only interveners.
But when we have a settlement, we do determine that the interested parties, and everybody's agreed, all the interveners have agreed, we've determined that those are the identified interested parties, that there isn't some other interested party out there.
We haven't, I mean, I have never, I mean, I don't want to say that.
We do notices on settlements always, I guess.
Only if everybody agrees. Issues change. Only if the issues change, okay. So that all of a sudden you've got a tree trimming plan that didn't exist anywhere in this rate case,
yeah,
and nobody heard of before the settlement.
Well, I don't know of any issues in here that have really changed.
No issues have changed here.
So we got that covered. If we, my feeling is, if I thought we all agreed that we should settle this and had a plan for what to do with SSIP, we could issue that notice and in 20 days make a decision.
I think we should go that route because the remaining issues that I would still like to pursue, I'm confident I can be well decided on in 20 days.
Say that again, what route?
That route.
What was that, Randy, you said?
Do the notice.
Well, we haven't discussed it, so I don't want to presume, but are there strong concerns about issues in the settlement that we need to get more information about?
You know, the major issue, I thought, in the settlement was an AARP's objection to the customer charge. And I think that was probably what was keeping AARP from joining the settlement.
Yeah, but that's conjecture. They didn't sign the settlement, and that is one of their big issues.
Yeah. I will say, and I don't know, because we haven't done that many rate cases in the 5.5 years here, but maybe it's just a feeling I have, or maybe I'm right, but it seems to me that when I look at what is clarified in the settlement, well, first of all, starting with the things that had the difference in revenue requirements so spread apart, and then look at the things that are clarified, it seems like this leaves a lot of things unclarified. The incentive program, the inflation increase, the vehicle expenses, the airplane use, the housing, the advertising and dues. Now, they're certainly not getting money to do all of those things in this settlement. And part of this is a question, so correct me if I'm wrong, but we wouldn't know exactly which ones they would be doing. Out of those things, you know, if we were talking about each one individually, I might have objections to some and not to others. There was a point where I had understood that advocacy staff was objecting to like $600,000 of industry dues, and then in discussion with staff, with advisory staff, I don't know if he misspoke or probably more likely, I wrote that down wrong. But we can't find anything that indicates that it was that much. It was smaller amounts. And even though the smaller amounts still kind of bug me, I think we tend to have too much of that kind of thing of dues of something that's important, like a organization that helps you learn about safety issues with certain kinds of pipe or something. Those are really important. If it's just joining every little chamber of commerce all over the state because you're an easy mark to help get an extra member, I don't think that's the role of the utilities. But now I'm convinced that we're down to small enough amount as part of the settlement. I hope they're going to, that's going to be some of what they curtail out of this.
Well, they may not curtail anything. They may not change any practice whatsoever. It's just whether they can put it in the rates, in the bottom line for rates.
Well, the next revenue here would not allow them to do all the things we had talked about. So certainly that's one of the things.
There may be sufficient grand total revenue for them to do everything.
Yeah.
That's the whole point. That's why you do rate cases and not trackers.
I understand, Alana. You're
had to get that one in.
You're making headway.
I would expect them to continue paying all of their industry dues mm-hmm. that they're paying. They might drop a few of them, but they probably would have dropped them anyway. I mean, I think that they're going to keep doing
what they're doing. Yeah, we're both doing conjecture now, Jer.
Yep.
Right.
But I think it's important to be thinking of rate cases this way, because it's simply, what number do you think they ought to be allowed to return? It's really not about what they do
on
a day-to-day basis.
We're not the managers.
Yeah.
How much money are they going to get? That's what this settlement is about.
Mm-hmm.
And then the issues just don't get decided.
Which can be a good thing. I mean, it can be a good thing because they're not decided against the commission's position or the consumer advocate position.
Mm-hmm.
Just like they're not decided,
and they're not losing. It gives their incentive to settle, then they don't lose on the issue either. So.
Yeah, with mm-hmm. ROEs at 10, the two proxies were 9.7 and 9.8, but they were larger in size, correct? And the one part that I keep going back to, I wasn't a part of the negotiations between advocacy staff and the company, and there's give and take. So.
Yeah, and they don't really matter. It's just what the results were.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's how they got to the results, though.
Yeah.
Might give up this for that, and.
Yeah, I mean, and you can ask them if we did have another hearing or something like that, what made you decide to do it this way or stuff, but.
The only other thing that I just kept fixating on was the housing, the employee housing. It's amortized over 20 years, and just under $40,000 a year. And
I think we were silent on that, too.
Yeah.
I don't remember it in there.
I don't think.
All of the revenue changes, all the changes in the revenue
requirements
is silent. Here's the total revenue increase, $2.5
million. Here's a number, and here's your ROE.
Yeah, that's true.
So there's no
giving
on any of it.
The revenue total is significantly less than what the company had sought.
Yep. I would like to talk just briefly about the basic service charge and the tool of collecting, you know, how these revenues are collected. And I know we went the full way in the last rate case of getting rid of the any sort of a volumetric or distribution. Did we call it a distribution charge?
Yeah, distribution delivery charge was what they called it.
But the ARP in their final brief made some comments about this level of the basic service charge being well above the company's number that was outlined in their cost of service study. And then the company replied and said, well, that doesn't include the demand charge, and so you'd have to add another $5.67 or something like that. And so we talked quite a bit about this yesterday, it probably isn't going to change customers' bills one way or another, whether you go back to a distribution delivery charge and collect something from customers on that versus putting it all into the customer charge. But there are some rationale for that I understand differently than I did the last time we voted on this. So I guess I was interested in seeing what the calculation would be. Alana, you can probably describe that, what it is that I'm looking for, better than I can with the proper terms.
I think it's just if you didn't change the DDC or you used the $18 before the $5.67, 18 whatever it is added.
13.
Yeah. Then and you had to recover the $5.67. You're not disallowing it, but you're recovering it from the same class differently. What would the numbers be if there was a demand?
It would
charge or something.
Yeah, it would be, I think, if I'm remembering right here, with the tax effects figured in, going by the cost of service, it was like 65 cents a decatherm was the charge. So
I didn't know that. I didn't think of that yesterday. So
it was 80 cents, and then the tax act got figured into it.
So what would that show us?
Well, a typical customer then was 7-point-something decatherms a month on average. Mm-hmm. And so take that times the 65, that's probably where the $5 and something came from. And so that would be for a typical customer. If somebody used more gas than that, it would be more. If they used less gas, it would be less, because it would be on the volumetric rate.
But, so you know, would the total increase be any different? Wouldn't it just be charged to the distribution delivery charge?
Not to the class, it wouldn't be any different. Not to the residents in whole. But based on what their consumption is, they would pay differently, a little bit, mm-hmm. a couple bucks difference a month, between a large user and a small user that kind of got maybe socialized, would be a good word for it, by spreading it evenly over the whole customer base. But, you know,
it seems like there'd have to be a pretty big disparity to have $2 a month difference, wouldn't there?
It, probably more than that. If you got a huge user and they're using, say, twice the normal 14 decatherms a month, which is pretty good. Mm-hmm. Then what's 14 times 65? Roughly $8 or something.
Yeah.
Into the charge. So then you're into it for somebody that hardly used any. If they used maybe 2 decatherms a month, there's like a $6 difference in there, $5 or $6. So between those two, large, really large user or really small user. But, you know, we went through all of this and made the decision to put it in the customer charge.
In the previous case.
And before that, with NSP.
Well, with NSP, but for MDU, I mean.
With NSP, and then at that point, I think the feeling was that MDU would do it too. And so they tried to do it in the next rate case, and AARP objected, and so we went like halfway to doing it. And then the next rate case after that, we went the rest of the way over AARP's objection. And I think the decision's been made, and now it's like AARP is asking to reconsider it.
And you're entitled to reconsider and
yep.
change your mind
yep.
with a basis. You just explain
certainly
your
are.
Basis for doing it.
So, but I mean, we had the reasons for going that way, and
Jerry, talk about the 25%, 75%, and if you took the 25% out, what would that do?
Well, see,
and that's really kind of the crux of AARP's biggest issue.
If you wanted to go away from putting it all in a customer charge, you'd have to decide. Yeah, everything is in the customer charge.
Right.
You'd have to decide whether the items were customer related, demand related, or energy related. Demand and energy related get recovered through the volumetric charges, and customer related traditionally has been stuff like service mains, meters, meter readers, things that are directly attributable to the number of customers that you have. Get a new customer, what kind of incremental expenses are coming onto the system? And so those would be charged to that customer. So that's kind of the tradition. And like I say, we moved away from that and just put everything in the customer charge. But if you had to make that decision, you'd have to decide how much of each component, how much of each asset and expense should go into each of these charges. And so they did the class cost of service study, and the class cost of service study splits, using allocation techniques, the stuff between these three customer charges. And there is a long-standing controversy that the distribution mains, which is their major expense, is somehow directly related to the number of customers. And the traditional arguments are from the consumer advocacy side or from a staff side in a rate case, have been no. Customer charges are only for meters and services, and the mains are part of the system, and they should be charged to demand and energy. And so anyway, this class cost of service study, MDU charged 25% of the distribution mains into the customer charge. And that's a bit high, is what AARP is saying. There are methods that are more used that and not always acceptable either, but to develop what's called a minimum distribution system and charge that to the customers.
And that would be less than 25% if you use that.
And so what AARP is saying is that even the $18.13 is probably high if you're going on these service studies. We don't have a run of the class cost of service study without that 25% in it, so we don't really know. But that same thing can influence also the allocation of the overall revenue requirement between the customer classes. So like the stuff that gets allocated as being a customer charge is allocated based on number of customers between the classes. So most of the customers are in the residential class. So that stuff, most of that gets allocated to the residential customers. So that affects a bit on how far under the overall rate of return they're getting from the residential class.
And how over they are from the others.
Yeah, and how over they are from the others.
So if you got into that, you'd have all your parties back in at the hearing.
But as I also think, though, I think that even if you did those things and got that other study and could sit and compare them, that you would still see that the Air Force and a large customer, interruptible customers, are paying a higher return, a way higher return than residential and the firm general. I don't think it would have influenced it enough to make that go away.
Right.
But if it's all going in the customer charge, none of that matters.
During the hearing, I asked Nicole Cavisto for statistics on whether size or efficiency has the most impact on usage in homes. Did they ever provide anything like that?
I don't remember seeing it, but I can look for it. I don't know if it has a concrete answer. Yeah.
I don't remember it being a specific late filed exhibit.
I don't remember it either.
That doesn't mean it didn't happen.
It might not be concrete, but you know, you would think there would be some sort of a study with all the utilities all across the country that must deal with this. Some kind of a study that would, you know, divide homes by square footage or something and see how consistently the usage rises, or whether it has to do with age or types of buildings or things like that. Determines the usage.
Yeah. A new house is much more efficient
right.
than an old house, even if it's bigger, I think, anyway.
No, it is.
And a new furnace is another thing.
I mean, you either have R13 or R...
Yep.
20, is it 19 or R19 and the walls?
I don't remember what the requirements are, but...
I've worked on remodeling homes that are 100 years old that have R0. Well, you open up the sheetrock or the tongue and or plaster and lath, and there's nothing behind it.
Yeah.
So, smaller square footage, but it's burning through a lot of fuel.
Beneficiaries, I think, of reverting back to where we were are lake homes that get used a few times a year and that sort of thing.
But it's also fair noting that retirees on fixed incomes might be in those older homes because that's affordable.
Yeah. You want to hear something crazy? Sarah found a comparison between Minnesota and North Dakota for NSP consumption per customer, and we consume less per customer than Minnesota does in that report, even though Minnesota spends all that money on conservation.
It's richer over there.
Too. And has a...
And all of which is irrelevant to this case.
Yeah. All right, I shut up now.
So R0 wouldn't be relevant either.
Thought that was interesting, though.
I'm not inclined to, at this point, change this approach.
I don't feel like we got strong, overwhelming evidence to change it. I'm not sure exactly where we're directing staff to go with this.
Me.
But I'm sensing that it is. Kind of precede the settlement might be acceptable, but that something needs to be worked out on the SSIP part yet.
I'd like one more work session after I get some more information from Pat.
Do we want a notice to go out to get that 20 days started?
I think that's a
good idea. Yes.
That can't hurt.
But what does the notice have to say? Does the notice
is going to ask if they want a hearing.
Opportunity
on the
for hearing on this settlement.
If they want a hearing on the settlement.
Do we have to be clear on what the settlement is? That it's on this settlement with.
It'll say settlement filed such and such a date or something.
Yeah.
We don't need to be clear what we. With the SSIP part. Because
I think
the
people
sides
that
weren't.
Can, well, they were clear.
They were clear that they didn't address it, and that we need
it.
To.
Yeah.
And so, can we issue a notice that and leave that unaddressed for now?
Yeah. I would recommend that we issue a notice that says, "Do you want a hearing on the settlement filed, whatever date?" And not say another word about it. And if somebody cares enough to look it up and read it, they can decide if they want a hearing on it. You know,
on the settlement.
On the settlement. Because I'm trying to focus this on that requirement in that case.
And so that would be a notice of opportunity.
Yes. Which we could have ready fairly soon. If you want to have a special meeting, get it out, get it going. Mm-hmm. And then I would have either written waivers or convene something with the ALJ and the reps of the parties to get the statement on the record. Now, if AARP asks for a hearing, then you have a hearing, I think. But
I thought that the statute you read put the burden on them to come forward. And so if you do a notice of opportunity.
It does, but I just can't see cutting the corners when you don't need to and you want to just find out where you stand. So I doubt that they're going to ask for a hearing, or we would have probably heard about it already, but we'll take care of that part.
Okay, how soon can you have that ready?
Probably tomorrow sometime, don't you think, Jer?
If you want to. Tomorrow's Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want it, I have an appointment here this afternoon.
I do,
but if we could have the afternoon meeting or something
later.
To issue it late afternoon tomorrow?
Do you have that available?
I'll be out of town, but I could call in.
I'll be here, so I'm fine.
Like 3 o'clock, and we can still get it out to the papers? Does that sound all right to everybody?
Yes.
Is that what you mean, Brian?
Yep, 3 o'clock would work.
Okay, prepare that. We will have a meeting at 3 o'clock tomorrow. Again, I'll be phoning in.
And then did I hear you want another work session?
I would like one more, and we can always cancel it if need be.
Did you want to put it on? Well, we don't meet again until the 22nd.
No, I mean, I would assume sometime next
before
week.
That. Yeah.
Yeah, if we could schedule that today, that would be good.
I think it's going to be tough. I was trying to schedule something else, and I'm not sure that was working.
And then, I hate to bring it up, but...
17?
What?
We really should, if we're doing some scheduling, we really should schedule a work session on the Otter Tail case.
Yeah, it's true.
But they'd like to implement dates soon for their new customer service system coming into place the 1st of October.
So what are you guys looking at for next week? Are you both gone most of the days?
I'll be right back.
I am. I'm out of the office on the 15th, that Wednesday. But and Monday the 13th, that'd be pretty difficult. But Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, pretty flexible.
Okay.
Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Wait a second. Thursday. Well, we're not. No, Thursday isn't. Well, you know what? I can still carve out time on Thursday. So, yeah.
We'll see what Randy has to say.
Okay, I'm gonna.
So did you guys get close to something?
Brian has his availability narrowed down. And I'm available those times pretty widely, so. Didn't you say Tuesday and?
Yeah, Tuesday between 1 and, you know, I have to conclude at 4. Or 10 to noon on Tuesday?
Afternoon's better.
I mean, there's that G&DA policy summit, but I don't know that it requires participation the entire time.
Right, yeah.
I'm not going over there.
That's what I was looking at. I've got it marked from 10 to 5, but to leave for a few hours or something has to give, and this is... I want to keep the ball rolling.
Well,
I guess that's on the 16th. The 14th is.
Right.
The 14th, the Energy Transmission and Conversion Committee is meeting, and I thought I was testifying at 1. And after that, I have to leave, but I think I could do something in the morning of the 14th. Although we should, you know, I think I'd kind of like to monitor that committee, but we can have staff sit in for a while while we have it.
It's like 10 to noon on the 14th?
Do you want to do it?
That's
soon?
A question whether that would work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so.
It doesn't work for me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, shoot.
So the 15th works for me, but I think you said you're out, right?
I'm gone all, yeah, the 15th.
And are you gone the 16th, Randy?
Yes, that's it. Well, we could do something early in the morning.
Are you talking for the GPA policies?
Yeah.
Because we probably don't need to be there all day. Right. Did you look at that agenda? Is it just packed with goods? Are you on it?
No, it's been a while since I looked, but I don't know what... I don't have it with me. I don't know...
Jerry, that wouldn't work Thursday morning.
Thursday would be a problem for Jerry.
You're gone.
Yeah. It's not, but, you know, I could call in.
Well, if you're going to call in, do we just back it up to Tuesday?
Well,
Either one of those days, if you want to do it in the morning, I can call in. Was Monday out?
Yes.
And Wednesday's out?
Yep.
And Friday?
Friday's open for me.
I'm open on Friday.
Let's just do it Friday then.
I don't know if Randy's available though.
Yeah, let's do it in the morning though.
Friday morning?
Okay.
Then we might as well. Do we want to do the work session on Otter Tail the same day or?
I think that'd be great.
Yeah.
Except for.
Go 8 to 10 and then 10 to 8.
I guess they probably listen to each other's stuff anyway over there.
I'm sure they do.
Videos, so we'll just have it.
I'm guessing they
crowd
do.
Full.
How long do you think if we went like from 8 to 9:30 and then from 10 to noon on Otter Tail, give a little more time on that since we haven't talked as much? Would 90 minutes do it for this? We've got a little bit of wiggle room, but.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking your MDU one shouldn't take that long. Since we've already.
I would say let's do. If we're starting, let's start at 8:30, plan to 9:30, And then I think we could say start the audit till 1 at 9:30 because we probably won't take the full hour for MDU, and that'd give us a little bit of a break. And
okay, perfect.
Okay, that's good.
You guys are more optimistic than me that we'll reach a conclusion on, especially the replacement projects that quickly. But
I thought we talked about just push the whole thing off and not make a decision in this case on it. Was that what we were?
No.
No?
No. So I think what we can get to is, I mean, we won't have the words all ready to go, but I think we can get a general direction. Mm-hmm. And then have an, to the point where it's time for staff to circulate an order, and then we can look at the fine details in the order and probably, I mean, we're not going to have an order ready by then to consider anyway. So
on August 17th, on Friday, we'll have the MDU work session from 8:30 to 9:30, Otter Tail 9:30 to 10:30. Mm-hmm. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
And we'll meet tomorrow at 3 for a brief meeting to issue that notice of opportunity.
I thought we were going to take, weren't we talking about starting Otter Tail at 10?
Well, at one point. It doesn't matter to me.
Okay. Yeah, I'm good. Is an hour long enough for Otter Tail?
Well, I guess if we don't get it'll be like this one. This was only scheduled till 2.
Just go longer.
I mean, you can put in your calendar what you want to put in it.
Okay.
We just put a start time.
Yeah.
That's all we care about.
Okay. So one's at 8:30 and one's at 9:30. You guys good with that?
Sure.
Okay.
I mean, why don't we do 8:30 and 10? Just to be
Friday the 17th.
All right, that's
8:30 and 10. Then if we have a little break.
All right, you too.
And this other thing you're all going to on Thursday, is there a notice on that? Or do we have an agenda? If you have
it on our agenda? Is the GEP
on
the calendar?
We'll get it on, but
First, let me know, is 10 o'clock preferable to you, or did you prefer 9? I don't care.
I think 10 gives us a little bit of flexibility, and maybe we're going to talk for 90 minutes or 89 minutes on SSIP.
Okay, so it's 10 o'clock then.
Yeah,
for Otter Tail.
Okay, now what was the other thing?
The other thing is just if you
tomorrow
would like to give us an agenda for this other thing you were talking about going to on Thursday, then we'll get that posted. We usually just attach the other agenda to it. Then we don't have to make up an agenda of our own.
Okay, but that's not to do with this.
No, but it's to do with getting a notice out, since you all know you're going, and I heard that, so that's why I'm asking.
Okay. So this work session is completed?